Prime members, you can listen to 60 Minutes ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery. Hello, snack lovers. Curb your cravings with My Mochi ice cream. Imagine a scoop of rich, creamy, premium ice cream in your favorite flavor. Now imagine that scoop wrapped up in the sweetest, softest dough known to mankind. That's My Mochi ice cream. Sweet, chewy, cool, and creamy, all in one bite. It's quite possibly the most joyfully chill sensation you've ever had in your life. My Mochi ice cream comes in tons of fabulous flavors, like strawberry, mango, cookies and cream, and double chocolate. Each box of My Mochi ice cream has 6 perfectly portioned mochis that are about 80 calories each, and it's also gluten-free. You can find My Mochi at Target or visit MyMochi.com to find a grocery store near you. That's MyMochi.com. Discover the joyfully chill sensation of My Mochi ice cream today.
Jeffrey Epstein died before many of his victims could face him in court. Tonight, 60 Minutes will show you images from his jail cell and autopsy, some of them graphic, taken by the medical examiner. His death has been ruled a suicide, but this forensic pathologist is not so sure.
Do you think there was foul play here?
We were surprised to find out how hard it was for public health officials to get on U.S. livestock farms, even after an infectious outbreak. So we decided to ask to go ourselves.
What if we agreed to go through all the guidelines you just described? Would you take us onto a farm?
You know, I'm not a farmer. I would have to talk to farmers. Our communications people would have to determine, you know, if they can find somebody willing.
Few people can say they have ever played at the Super Bowl. Next month, Shakira adds her name to that list. We went to Spain to watch the 5-foot-3-inch ball of energy work, mix a new song, and keep the father of her 2 children, Barca star Gerard Piqué, on his toes.
You said, "I'm going to win the World Cup just to see you at the finals."
Okay.
Didn't you?
Okay.
I'm Leslie Stahl.
I'm Bill Whitaker.
I'm Anderson Cooper.
I'm Sharon Alfonsi.
I'm Scott Pelley. Those stories and more tonight on 60 Minutes.
This spring, if you'd rather spend time enjoying your lawn instead of trying to keep it alive, there's good news. TruGreen is the easiest and most affordable way to get a beautiful lawn. All you have to do is water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and even some things you might not even think of. They'll do all of it, while you can do literally anything else. With True Green, you could have your lawn looking as good as a putting green. That's not hyperbole. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. True Green offers a satisfaction guarantee, and they have a verified best price promise, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people guaranteed.
Convicted sex offender Jeffrey Epstein has been accused of sexually assaulting countless teenage girls. Last July, the wealthy financier was arrested, and many of his victims were looking forward to finally facing him in court. But weeks after his arrest, Epstein was found dead in his jail cell. Medical examiner concluded that Jeffrey Epstein killed himself. Since then, conspiracy theories have flourished. Epstein was connected to a long list of rich and powerful people. Some suspect he was killed because of what he knew or what he threatened to tell. How did one of the most high-profile inmates in the country end up dead in a federal jail? After a 5-month investigation, 60 Minutes has obtained photos, some of them graphic autopsy photos, and evidence from inside Jeffrey Epstein's cell. This is the cell where Jeffrey Epstein was found on Saturday morning, August 10th, 2019. There are dozens of photos taken by the medical examiner's office that day. On the floor, a mattress and piles of sheets. Several nooses that appear to be fashioned from the orange bed linens are laid out. His medicine's photographed, but no body.
Is there a photograph of when he was found dead in the cell?
No, there's no photograph taken of Mr. Epstein in the cell.
Dr. Michael Bodden observed the 4-hour autopsy for Jeffrey Epstein's brother, Mark. Bodden, a renowned forensic pathologist who's taken controversial positions over his decades-long career, is investigating Epstein's death for his client.
Do you think there was foul play here?
The forensic evidence released so far, including the autopsy, point much more to murder and strangulation than the suicide and suicidal hanging. I hesitate to make a final opinion until all the evidence is in.
People will say, well, you're being paid by Mark Epstein, so of course you're going to say that something suspicious is going on.
That's a reasonable thing for some people to think. But our job is to find what the truth is, just to find out whether it's a homicide or a suicide. We're still haven't gotten all the information.
Guards found Epstein at approximately 6:33 a.m., and sources say one of them could be overheard saying, "Breathe, Epstein, breathe."
I thought at the time...
Dr. Bodden believes, based on the autopsy, that Epstein died around 4:30 that morning, 2 hours earlier.
The guards say they came in at 6:30. They found him. They call emergency services. They tried to do CPR with him, but he's dead. But rather than leave the body there, they take the body to an emergency room.
Yeah.
Is that normal protocol?
No, that's not normal protocol. The EMS people normally, and especially in jail, should not move a dead body.
He's right. Bureau of Prison Protocol mandates a suicide scene should be treated with the same level of protection as any crime scene in which a death has occurred. 60 Minutes reviewed hundreds of graphic photographs from the autopsy of Jeffrey Epstein and inside his cell. There are two nooses, a bit of orange sheet tied to the grate of a window. On the top bunk, bottles and medicine stand upright. Below it, another piece of fabric is tied through a hole on the bed about 4 feet from the ground. Did Epstein, who was nearly 6 feet tall and 185 pounds, somehow lean in and hang himself from the lower bunk? We don't know. These are the known facts. On July 6th, Jeffrey Epstein was booked into the Metropolitan Correctional Center, or MCC, in downtown Manhattan, a federal high-security holding facility for inmates awaiting trial. Suicides at the MCC are rare. The last one was 14 years ago. The jail has temporarily housed everyone from Mexican drug lord El Chapo to mafia boss John Gotti and fraudster Bernie Madoff.
MCC is the worst jail or prison I've ever been to, by far.
It's not a club fed.
It's not a club anything. It is dirty. It's insect infested, rodent infested. It was built for about 350 and it houses over 700. So the inmates are packed in.
Bruce Barquette is the lawyer for Epstein's first cellmate, 52-year-old Nick Tartaglione, a brawny former police officer accused of murdering 4 men. They shared a cell in the SHU, the special housing unit, which is considered safer than general population.
Jail's a tough place. The rules don't exist the way they do in society. Somebody like Jeffrey Epstein, an elderly, rich, white male, is going to have a tough time in general population.
Epstein was directing money to be deposited in other inmates' commissary accounts in exchange for his protection, sources say, because he feared for his life. But the government says Epstein was suicidal and made his first failed suicide attempt weeks after he arrived. According to court documents, on July 23rd, a guard found Epstein on the floor of his cell with a strip of bedsheet around his neck. Epstein claimed his cellmate, Nick Tartaglione, attacked him.
Epstein says that Nick tried to kill him. Nick says absolutely nothing like that happened.
It's not just Nick says absolutely nothing happened. Absolutely nothing happened. No one says that Nick tried to kill Epstein.
Epstein was moved to the psych unit and placed on suicide watch. But 1 week later, Epstein, at the direction of the MCC's psychological staff, was taken off suicide watch and required to have an assigned cellmate.
This was a monumental failure on all levels, and that's why it has fueled the conspiracies, and I understand that.
Cameron Lindsay is a former federal prison warden.
Who should have made sure that he wasn't taken off suicide watch, in your opinion?
The leadership of the facility should have stepped in and said, while I appreciate the perspective of you, chief psychologist, I'm going to override that decision and we're going to leave Epstein on suicide watch, especially subsequent to the suicide attempt that he had.
Epstein was moved back to the SHU and assigned a new cellmate. We reviewed photos and interviewed jail employees to create this composite of the area. Each tier of the SHU has 8 cells, usually with 2 inmates per cell. Epstein's cell, 220, was about 15 feet away and up a set of stairs from the guard station with a single locked gate between them. The gate is the only way in or out of the tier. Lawyers say the day before Epstein was found dead, he was upbeat and looking forward to an appeal hearing on his bail. That same day, his cellmate was released and no new cellmate was assigned, even though he was required to have one. Michael Thomas and Tova Noel are the two guards who were working the overnight shift on the SHU. Court documents say Epstein was escorted into his cell by Tova Noel at approximately 7:49 p.m. Then, the guards didn't check in on him again until shortly after 6:30 a.m. the next morning.
So in the SHU, they should be checked in on every 30 minutes.
They should be checked on every 30 minutes. It's my understanding, based on the documents that I examined, the two officers that were working in the special housing unit allegedly falsified the records and did not do any rounds for approximately 8 hours.
How big of a deal is that?
That's a huge, huge deal. This is one of the most basic operational aspects of managing a jail or prison.
Instead, federal prosecutors say surveillance video makes clear the guards searched the internet and appeared to have been asleep. Both guards were working overtime.
When you're being forced to stay over shifts, not go home and see your family, You start to see people take shortcuts.
Tyrone Covington is the president of the union that represents the guards, who both now face criminal charges and have pleaded not guilty.
I absolutely believe that these staff members are being made a scapegoat.
Because it was Jeffrey Epstein?
Because it was Jeffrey Epstein.
Covington doesn't think there was any foul play, and he says there should be surveillance video to prove it. In November, Attorney General William Barr told reporters he personally reviewed surveillance video that showed nobody entered the area where Epstein was held. But sources say a second camera inside the tier, the one that could have seen Epstein's cell door and the doors of other inmates, was not working that night.
The theories that are out there, one of them is that it was another inmate who may have killed Jeffrey Epstein.
Come on.
You don't believe that?
He was found hanging in his cell. He had tried to commit suicide before that. He was a very wealthy man who was looking at a lifetime in prison. You know, sometimes a cigar is just a cigar.
So Epstein's taken off suicide watch. The day before he kills himself, his roommate is removed from the cell. The cameras on his tier are not working. The guards fell asleep. It seems almost impossible to think all of those things could happen in that way.
It does, and that's what makes this so shocking. I mean, this is a failure on multiple levels.
Do you think there's any way that Jeffrey Epstein could have been murdered?
Absolutely, unequivocally not.
There was a note in Jeffrey Epstein's cell. He wrote that one guard kept me in a locked shower stall for 1 hour. Noel, the guard, sent me burnt food, giant bugs crawling over my hands. No fun. Dr. Michael Bodden says if anyone thought Jeffrey Epstein was suicidal, they wouldn't have let him have a ballpoint pen that could be used to harm himself or someone else.
The other thing we just noticed looking at the photos, it appears he had some kind of sleep apnea machine. You can see a long electrical cord.
Yes, there were other wires and cords present that it would have been easy to use to hang oneself within a few minutes.
But the key reason Dr. Bodden thinks Jeffrey Epstein's death might be a homicide is because of the unusual fractures he saw in Epstein's neck.
There were fractures of the left, the right thyroid cartilage, and the left hyoid bone.
This is an autopsy photo of Epstein's broken hyoid bone, a U-shaped bone that sits under the jaw that part of the tongue attaches to. The thyroid cartilage sits at the front of the neck.
I have never seen three fractures like this in a suicidal hanging. Sometimes there's a fracture of the hyoid bone or a fracture of the thyroid cartilage.
But not three.
Very unusual to have two, and not three. And going over 1,000 jail hangings, suicides, in the New York City State prisons over the past 40, 50 years, no one had three fractures.
The New York City Medical Examiner's Office disputes Bodden's theory, saying that fractures of the hyoid bone and cartilage can be seen in suicides and homicides, and they stand firmly behind their finding of suicide by hanging. Then there's the two nooses. This was the one that was sketched and included in the autopsy by the medical examiner, presumably because they thought it was used in Epstein's death. But Dr. Bodden says that noose and the wounds on Jeffrey Epstein's neck don't appear to match.
What do you see when you see these two things together?
What I see here is that this noose doesn't match the ligature furrow mark. It's wider than this.
To the naked eye, it looks like there's some blood here, and it doesn't look like there's any blood on this noose.
That's right. This looks like a clean noose that was never used to compress anybody's neck.
There's also something that's striking about the photos. The wound is down here. You'd think if somebody hung themselves, the wound would be maybe up here.
Yes. Most hangings, especially free hangings, the ligature slides up to beneath the jawbone, the mandible. Here it's in the middle of the neck.
Dr. Bodden says a wound straight across the neck is more common when a victim is strangled by a wire or cord. He and Epstein's brother Mark met with the government and asked to see any forensic testing and any video. But they say they were told the ongoing criminal case against the two guards prevents the Justice Department from releasing any information.
So the criminal charges are now basically a firewall for the family to get any information about
from the Justice Department.
The charges have also silenced the guards. The attorney for guard Michael Thomas says 5 months after Epstein's death, Thomas has still not spoken to investigators or revealed how he alone found Epstein's body. Disappointed that they never got to face Epstein in court, many victims are now angry that the investigation into his death has left so many questions still unanswered.
Have you ever covered a carpet stain with a rug? Ignored a leaky faucet? Pretended your half-painted living room is supposed to look like that? Well, you're not alone. We've all got unfinished home projects. But there's an easier way. When you download Thumbtack, it's easier to care for your home from top to bottom. Pull out your phone, and in just a few steps, you can search, chat, and book highly rated pros right in your neighborhood. Plus, you'll know what to tackle next, because Thumbtack is the app that shows you what to do, who to hire, and when. So say goodbye to all those unfinished home projects, and say hello to caring for your home the easier way. Download Thumbtack and start a project today.
Most of us know by now we shouldn't overuse antibiotics so we don't end up with bacterial infections that the drugs can't treat. But it's interesting to know that more than 12 million pounds of medically important antibiotics sold in this country are not for use in humans. They're for livestock. And the antibiotics are driving the spread of drug-resistant bacteria in the animals that can get passed onto us through food if we don't cook and handle it properly. Yet it's almost impossible to get on the farms to conduct inspections and stop infection outbreaks from spreading, even for public health officials.
My job is to look for outbreaks. When I see them, I describe them, and I'm supposed to stop them. Very simple.
In 2015, Washington State epidemiologist Scott Lindquist investigated an outbreak of antibiotic-resistant salmonella tied to roaster pigs.
Our estimate is anywhere between 3,000 to 4,000 people were probably ill with this entire outbreak. But we had 175 folks that had positive cultures.
And meaning that they were severely ill.
Yeah.
Severely ill, with dozens hospitalized because the salmonella was resistant to antibiotics. Lindquist traced the cause of the outbreak to a slaughterhouse called Kapausen Meats.
We come in and we find the bacteria essentially everywhere. Drains, utensils, the truck that transports them from the farms.
Was it the slaughterhouse's fault?
I have no idea. And I don't say that lightly. I've only gone back as far as the slaughterhouse. So I want to go back to the farms and I want to sample the pigs at the farm to say, do they have this bug, this exact DNA fingerprint? Before they came to the slaughterhouse.
The farms he wanted to visit were in Montana, where the slaughterhouse told him the pigs came from. But to his surprise, Lindquist, who was conducting the investigation, was flatly turned down.
Did you express your anger?
And there were a couple heated phone calls. I was pretty well known for exerting my strong opinion about getting out to the farms. But in the end, I was thwarted.
Thwarted, he says, by the National Pork Producers Council, the lead lobbying group for the $23 billion pork industry. They sent Lindquist a letter denying him access to the farms, saying, "I know that you do not want any inadvertent negative consequences to farms as a result of this proposed on-farm sampling." It was signed by Chief Veterinarian Liz Wagstrom.
The farmers that had been asked to provide samples, declined to have samples taken on their farms, and we supported that decision.
Why wouldn't the farmers want to find out where this started, where the salmonella issue outbreak started? Why wouldn't you want to find out where it started?
By the time they wanted to go to the farm, it was 5 months after the first case. This point in the outbreak, if it were found on the farms, there was no way to tell if it started at the farm or if it started at the plant and the truck had brought it back to the farm.
But Scott Lindquist said it wasn't too late for his investigation to get information that might slow the outbreak, which was continuing.
I think they didn't want me to make the farms look bad, and actually even offered to code the farms, call them Farm A, B, C, and D, so it wouldn't be something that would, in my records, would even name the farm, but it would give me the information, did their pigs have this bacteria? And I got absolutely none of that.
He had gone out of his way to assure you and the farmers that he wouldn't even name them.
What the farmers were concerned about was the discussion that in his plan they wanted to go to the other plants that those farmers sent pigs to.
Exactly.
And those farms could be easily identified just by their state of origin.
When we asked Liz Wagstrom to help us visit a hog farm, she raised a surprising concern.
Biosecurity.
Biosecurity. If I were to go to a pig farm as a veterinarian, I'll take a shower. I'll shower in and use shampoo so I don't carry any diseases into the barn.
What if we agreed to sanitize ourselves to the ultimate degree, go through all the guidelines you just described? Would you take us onto a farm?
You know, I'm not a farmer. I would have to talk to farmers. Our communications people would have to determine, you know, if they can find somebody willing.
And we'll go with any guidelines, any shampooing, anything you want us to do.
I can see if they can make that happen. And I'm sorry, that's the best I can do.
It didn't happen. We never got permission to go on a farm. But the council did give us this footage. It wasn't just us. Even federal inspectors have trouble getting on farms. They are not allowed on a farm to look for bacteria that make people sick without the farmer's permission.
We have this black box of what's happening on the farm, right? So we don't have a way of tracing tainted products all the way back to the farm. We just don't, we don't track that. We don't keep the records.
Dr. Lance Price is a microbiologist at George Washington University and a leading expert in drug-resistant bacteria.
And so that's like a big pile of salmonella cells?
Yeah, pretty much.
Here in his lab, Price and his team test grocery store meat for antibiotic-resistant bacteria as part of an ongoing study.
So these bacteria, we consume them with the meat. Those bacteria then get into our system and they cause infections. Then the infections, because they're already resistant to antibiotics, the doctors don't have any antibiotics to treat those infections.
But can you cook these pathogens out of pork?
You can. The problem is that when you bring that package into your house, you're bringing a package, a raw package of meat. When you open that up, you've now just potentially released bacteria, pathogens, potentially drug-resistant pathogens in your kitchen.
I mean, you don't hear that much about people getting salmonella or whatever.
Well, yeah, I mean, so each year there are outbreaks of drug-resistant infections.
The Pork Council says the United States pork production system yields the safest, highest quality pork available, and U.S. pork producers adhere to rigorous government regulations. Farmers started using antibiotics decades ago, not only to fight disease, but to make animals grow faster with less food. Their use increased as farms got larger. Today, most hogs are raised on big industrial farms that are owned by multi-billion dollar companies, some of them foreign.
You've got these big, in some cases, multinational companies that are messing with our food safety system, but they hide behind this image of an American farmer. Why can't we regulate the use of antibiotics on the farm? Oh, we've got to protect the American farmer. That would be encroachment by the government. Why can't we test these animals on the farm to see if they're carrying dangerous pathogens? Oh, that would hurt the farmer. We got to protect the guy in the overalls. But this is not a guy in overalls. This is a guy in a suit with a Maserati. You know, I mean, these are big companies that we are protecting. And by protecting them, we're hurting ourselves.
Some small independent farms like this one don't use antibiotics. Here, the hogs are raised more on open spaces, and piglets stay with their mothers for nearly twice as long as on the industrial farms. But most American pigs today are raised on large farms with 5,000 animals or more, often housed in tight quarters.
Because the animals get sick under those conditions, cramming them together, stressing them out, they give them low doses of antibiotics all the time to try to prevent those infections.
Well, wait, they create the situation that gives them stress, they give them antibiotics to deal with what they created, and then they get resistant? Is that the chain?
Yeah. I mean, you nailed it, right? So this is it seems ridiculous on the surface, right?
What we've been told is that some of these farms take these pigs and just put them tightly packed into an area, and they're so tightly packed that they get stressed, and therefore they get preventative antibiotics.
That's a pretty common misconception. So when you're talking about crowding, that would be an improper stocking density. So,
yeah, but who can go find out? There's no oversight. These farms have somehow won the right to keep people off the farm to inspect. Am I correct?
Well, for one thing, we have no legislation around stocking density. So there is not a law that says...
Exactly.
But the incentive for farmers to do the right thing is really high.
There's no way to find out. I don't understand how the farmers got this right to make sure we can't find out for sure.
Well, and we're trying to do everything we can to do the right thing so that the concerns that you're expressing here are unnecessary.
In 2017, the Food and Drug Administration told farmers to stop using antibiotics in animals for growth purposes. But here's the loophole. They are permitted to use them for disease prevention, and there are no reporting requirements.
Would you support a regulation that says farmers have to report how much they use antibiotics and for what?
I would support discussion around trying to figure out how to collect that data.
If they had to report it, they'd have to report it.
I work for farmers, and if it'd be a discussion among our leadership on whether we would support or not.
Microbiologist Lance Price thinks the agriculture industry has too much power over regulation policies and chafes specifically at a new USDA rule the industry pushed for that went into effect last month. It loosened some significant regulations at hog slaughterhouses where inspectors are allowed. The USDA says it's modernizing the process, including requiring more microbial tests.
I don't see modernization. I see just straight-up deregulation in an industry that you want regulated.
What couldn't slaughterhouses do that they can do now?
Well, what the regulation does is allows companies to set their own line speeds.
You're saying that the speed of these carcasses going through can be faster.
So today it's 20 or almost 20 animals per minute. Now there's no limit.
But people are supposed to be inspecting them on this line.
Right.
In the old system, qualified USDA inspectors examine each and every carcass looking for disease and contamination. Slaughterhouses can opt into the new system or keep the old one. The USDA declined our request for an on-camera interview, but it said in a statement that under the new system, government line inspectors are still expected to conduct an inspection of each carcass, as well as slow or stop the line if they see problems. But the number of government inspectors on the line is being reduced by 40%. To compensate for the loss, the USDA is adding high-level federal inspectors to enforce the plant's sanitation and safety procedures. Some of the job of examining the carcasses will be taken over by plant employees.
Are they being trained?
This is one of the things that I was shocked by when I saw the new regulation, is that they're saying, hey, we're gonna throw this back to the company, but we're not going to mandate any training for these people. So we're just going to throw it to the company, and we're going to have them figure it out.
Looking to instantly upgrade your Mother's Day gift from typical to meaningful? Shop Etsy. Get up to 30% off well-crafted and personalized gifts from participating shops until May 12th. This year, embrace your creative side. You know, the side your mom gave you. And shop Etsy for custom jewelry, style pieces, home decor, and extra special items she'll adore. Need something original and affordable for Mother's Day? Etsy has it. Shop until May 12th for up to 30% off gifts for mom. Terms apply.
Shakira is one of the world's biggest music stars, a crossover phenomenon with hits in both Spanish and English. She's won 3 Grammys, 11 Latin Grammys, and amassed a $350 million fortune. Now at 42, she's about to hit another high note, performing at the halftime show at this year's Super Bowl with Jennifer Lopez. It's a remarkable journey for a woman who was cut from her elementary school choir in Colombia. Her classmates said she sounded like a goat. Shakira now lives in Spain. We went to see her there and found an artist bristling with restless energy and drive that sometimes torture her, but always propel her, lifting her to one of the biggest stages in the world, the Super Bowl in Miami. 2 months before kickoff, Shakira lit up center court at the Davis Cup tennis tournament in Madrid with the kind of full-throated, hip-thrusting performance that has electrified audiences for more than 2 decades. This was her first live performance in more than a year, a warm-up for the Super Bowl, and a showcase for the distinctive music and eye-catching moves that have catapulted her to one-name international pop star status. Shakira fills huge stadiums around the world. Her devotees cry out, sometimes just plain cry, to hear hits like Hips Don't Lie.
I've seen you running around. You go from guitar to drums, the dancing and the singing. It just looks like you're having so much fun. Are you?
Oh, yeah. I have a blast on stage. I feel that that's my turf. It's a comfortable place for me.
You feel the music?
I listen to music through my body. Even when I'm mixing songs in the recording studio, if I don't move, I know that there's something wrong. I say, do you see that moving? Do you see my hips moving? It's not working. Hips don't lie.
A lot of your dance moves are quite provocative.
That's what my mom says.
That's what your mom
says.
Now
you're sounding like her. It just comes out like that.
So you're just feeling it, and that's what happens.
It's the way I move, baby.
When it comes to her moves and her music, Shakira leaves nothing to chance. The Davis Cup performance in November was just 8 minutes. She spent a full month rehearsing. When we dropped in, we saw an artist in constant motion and total control. She fine-tunes the fine points of every performance. No detail is too small. Whether working on the choreography, critiquing the dancers,
the hair police. Can we start over?
Or directing the timing of the show.
From she-wolf into tutu, right? That's the one you stretch out?
They used to call James Brown the hardest working man in show business. It seemed to us Shakira is vying for that title. In the studio, on the stage, Shakira strives for perfection.
I can't really be hard on myself, wanting it to be 100% perfect, but I know perfection doesn't exist, but it's a lesson I haven't quite learned yet. If it were up to me, I wouldn't be celebrating any of my performances, really.
None of them?
None of them, no. There's always something that I wish would have been done differently and that I could have done better.
Where she sees imperfection, her multitude of fans see incandescence. She has sold 80 million records worldwide. 5 albums cracked the U.S. Billboard Top 10. She writes or co-writes nearly all her songs.
What does creating the music do for you?
Sometimes it saves me a visit to a shrink. Literally.
It's cathartic.
Such a therapeutic, yeah, cathartic vehicle, you know, for me to express my thoughts, my angst. Sometimes I'm just restless, and I don't know what it is. And I think it's what I just need is a piece of paper and a pen or my computer and just start writing. And then being able to put music to those words is something really beautiful, I guess.
Her distinctive sound is a blend of the music and colors of home, the coastal Colombian city of Barranquilla, a melting pot of cultures, indigenous, European, African, Middle Eastern.
I have a little bit of everything in my blood.
You mix all of those elements with your dance and the sounds of your music?
You know, when I was a kid, I wanted to be an anthropologist. I guess that somehow I'm kind of vicariously being one through my music.
One of her biggest hits, Waka Waka, the anthem for the 2010 Soccer World Cup, had African roots.
There are songs that make you feel like a dog biting your own tail. You never figure it out. And there are songs that are so easy that just come to you. Songs like Waka Waka, for example.
That came to you easily.
The music and the lyrics came to me at the same time. You're a good soldier, choosing your battle. You're a good soldier, choosing your battles. Pick yourself up, dust yourself up, back in the saddle. I'm like, I need a paper and a pen. A paper and a pen, someone, run.
Waka Waka hit number one in more than 15 countries, racked up almost 2.4 billion views on YouTube. And it swept Gerard Piqué into her life.
And it's Gerard Piqué.
The Barcelona soccer star was one of several World Cup players who appeared in the music video.
For me, it was like very shocking. I had to dance.
Well, that's not dance, going like this.
No,
that's not dancing.
I had to do some you know, some movement. Yeah.
You had to do the waka waka movement.
And for me, it was ridiculous.
But his 1 second cameo was enough to catch Shakira's eye.
I wasn't a soccer fan, so I didn't know who he was. But when I saw the video, I was like, that one's kind of cute. And then someone decided to introduce us.
Yeah.
The couple now has two boys, live in Barcelona, and have enough combined star power that Forbes magazine named them one of the most powerful couples on the planet.
For all intents and purposes, you two are married. But you're not, officially married.
To tell you the truth, marriage scares the out of me. I don't want him to see me as the wife. I'd rather him see me as his girlfriend. Exactly. Yeah. His lover, his girlfriend, like a little forbidden fruit, you know? I want to keep him on his toes. I want him to think that anything's possible depending on behavior.
Anything's possible should be the mantra for Shakira Isabel Mubarak-Ripoll. At 10, she entered a singing contest and won. At 13, she signed her first record deal. 5 years later, she was one of the biggest rockeras, rock stars, in Latin America. But she craved a broader audience. So she learned English, studied the lyrics of Bob Dylan and the poetry of Walt Whitman, and at age 24 was blasting up the U.S. charts with a new look and a new song.
What made you believe you could make it in the United States?
Destiny? I had no doubt in my mind. I had visions of what was going to happen to me since a very early age.
It was a steady rise until 2018 when she ran afoul of Spanish authorities over when she took up residence and how much tax she owes. She is paid about $16 million while she fights the assessment. It's a staggering sum that would have been unimaginable to a young Shakira. When she was 7, her father's jewelry business went bankrupt. The family went from middle class to poor overnight.
What impact did that have on you?
Oh, a tremendous impact. It was really important to me to vindicate my family's financial situation and social status, and to a point that it became an obsession to me, a healthy obsession, I would say, you know, to succeed in life, to bring my dad and my mom out of that precarious situation. I think that I would not be the same person if my dad hadn't had that financial setback.
Her father scraped together the money to keep his bookish daughter in Catholic school. At 18, with money from her first hit album, she started a foundation to educate disadvantaged children.
Why'd you do that? You were a kid yourself.
I was a kid myself. I grew up witnessing that many kids my age, many kids just like me, instead of going to school, were sleeping barefoot in the park.
Hola! ¿Cómo está?
She has built 6 schools and educated 23,000 children in Colombia. She's considered a global leader on education, who lobbies presidents to invest in early childhood development.
I've always been convinced that my purpose in life is not to shake it endlessly. You know, there's got to be so much more to it, you know. My musical career has served as a vehicle to work for children, which is the project of my life.
Changing lives, creating music. She says she's as driven as ever. She's working on a new song.
Got you moving.
Got me moving.
And your hips don't rise. Yeah.
In true Shakira fashion, she thinks it can be better.
There's something in the frequency of the bass that is bugging me a little bit. I was just feeling it as I was listening.
pop star, mother, philanthropist. It's a lot to carry on her 5'3" frame. On a walk in Barcelona, we got a taste of what it's like to be Shakira.
Can I have a photo for you?
Yeah, of course.
And with the Super Bowl just weeks away,
you'll see me in all my splendor. Meaning, I'd be like, stressed out.
That, she told us, is part of her process, her drive for perfection, which is taking her all the way to the Super Bowl.
I know that was in my to-do list. So February 3rd, I'm going to go check.
You said you like your music to say something. What will be the message that you will send in your Super Bowl performance?
I think the message is going to be, listen, I'm a woman. I'm a Latina. It wasn't easy for me to get to where I am. And being at the Super Bowl is the proof that everything is possible. That the dreams of a little girl from Barranquilla, Colombia, were made of something, of what dreams are made of. And I'm going to be there giving it all.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Next Sunday on 60 Minutes, two performers, an athlete and an actor, each at the top of his game. Tennis's Rafael Nadal and Hollywood's Joaquin Phoenix. I'm Anderson Cooper. We'll be back next week with those stories and more on another edition of 60 Minutes.
If you like 60 Minutes, you can listen early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music. Before you go, tell us about yourself by filling out a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
I'm CBS News correspondent Major Garrett, host of the podcast Agent of Betrayal, The Double Life of Robert Hansen. During the Cold War, FBI agent Robert Hansen traded classified secrets to the Kremlin in exchange for cash and jewels. In the podcast, you'll hear from Hansen's closest friends, family members, victims, and colleagues for the most comprehensive telling of who Robert Hansen really was. Binge the entire series now. Agent of Betrayal, The Double Life of Robert Hansen is available on the Wondery app, Amazon Music, or wherever you get your podcasts.